Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're watching and listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, my guest is Robert Phoenix. Robert has been a guest with us before. Robert has unique insight, a deep understanding of history, geopolitics, astrophysics, astrology, and so forth. So, without any further ado, Robert, welcome back to the Cosmic Switchboard Show.
Hey James, thanks for having me back on, and I always enjoy being on here with you. I think you're a terrific host, and I've been telling people that we're gonna have the show, and we'll put it out there and blast it, and get you some more eyeballs and some more ear holes. So thanks for having me on.
Oh, anytime, Robert. Well, based on what's been going on and your analysis, I know you just did a chart on the person who committed the self-immolation. Wherever you want to go with it, just what do you see hermetically as above, so below? A lot of unrest in the heavens, and as Elizabethans would have said, of English times. Also, that unrest is reflected here on terra firma. So, the floor is yours, Robert.
Yeah, so to be clear, I didn't do Bushnell's chart. Somebody told me that he might be a Pisces, which would make some sense. But what struck me about the self-immolation is a current transit that is taking place with Chiron, which is kind of a planetoid, I suppose. It's an object that is located between Saturn and Uranus. There are all these very large chunks, which come in from the Kuiper Belt, which are more than likely pieces of Maldek or Marduk, whatever you want to name the planet that was supposedly involved in this interplanetary war with Mars. And a lot of these very large chunks have been sucked into Saturn's orbit and have become moons. And in 1977, they found that there were two of these objects. I think they discovered one first, then the other one secondarily, that actually had an orbit, like it had this strange elliptical orbit. And they settled on the name of Chiron for this object. And again, the first sort of sighting of it and cataloging of it takes place in 1977. At that time, Chiron is in the sign of Taurus. So it really makes its presence known as Gen X is starting to get cooking, right? A lot of Gen X people have Chiron and Taurus, and it has a 50-year irregular orbit. So what in a very short period of time, what people have been able to understand is the importance of what's called the Chiron return, which happens at the age of 50. And it's when Chiron returns to where it was in your birth chart. Now, what's interesting is that none of these discussions were happening prior to 1977. So even afterwards, as the astrological community began to integrate Chiron and its importance, it really brings us a new wrinkle in terms of what it represents and how we can look at larger cycles with what's going on in the world in general. And if you go back and look at like what was happening in 1968, and this is way before the discovery of Chiron, in 1968, well, not too much, 1968, Chiron was in Aries, and when you look at that time, you can see that it's sort of the beginning of second wave feminism, and Aries represents the male energy or masculine energy. And so we see this movement of women wanting, because what's the opposite sign of Aries? It's Libra, which is Venus ruled. It's all about balance and it's all about rights and it's all about equality. So you can see the other sort of manifesting itself. And then in my estimation, that's a period where men start to become weaker and women start to become stronger. You know, and it's not long after that that we get Helen Reddy, I Am Woman, right? And then also, Chiron in Aries is very much an incredibly violent time in what's going on in the world, particularly in places like France in the summer of 1968. You have the Democratic Convention in Chicago. And you know, some would say that, you know, this was the kind of the militarization of the common man, right? Viva la revolution. And that there was a huge amount of risk involved in kind of one's standing or one's life in order to rise up against the man or the machine. And with Chiron, there's always some degree of risk that you're either going to be seen as an outsider, rejected. That's part of Chiron's story. So to understand Chiron, we have to go back to the original source. And Chiron is the offspring of Cronos and Philyra. And Philyra was a what's called an oceanid. So she was a nymph of the ocean. And Cronos, there are two stories of Chiron and Chiron's conception. One, Cronos comes to Earth as a white stallion. And apparently Philyra could not resist a white stallion and then copulates with her. The other story is that he turns Philyra also into a horse to avoid being seen by Hera. So they're both horses. I guess that's the G-rated version of it. But in any case, Philyra has an offspring, and when she has this offspring, it's a centaur. And all those asteroids that I was talking about between Uranus and Saturn, they're all named after centaurs, including Chiron. And the other asteroid that has a discernible orbit is called Charlico, and that's the name of Chiron's wife. But we focus mainly on Chiron. So what happens to Chiron after he's born? His mother rejects him because he's hideous, right? He's this demigod that is half horse. So part of what we get with Chiron is rejection. That's one of the key themes. Another part of that, which goes along with rejection, is shame. And then the third part of Chiron that is a kind of a manifestation of those two is guilt. So rejection, shame, and guilt is what Chiron kind of specializes in, right? Now, Philyra is so horrified, she beseeches to the gods to turn her into an inanimate object so that she could never have another child. And the gods, of course, listen to her, and they turn her into a tree. I'm not sure if it's an alder or a birch, but she becomes a tree, right? And now Chiron is abandoned, and that's another aspect of Chiron, is abandonment. So we have rejection, we have shame, we have abandonment and guilt. All four of those qualities are associated with Chiron to some degree. Now, what happens to Chiron is that he's adopted, and he is adopted by Apollo and Artemis, and they teach Chiron everything. And this is all happening in a place called Mount Pelion, and that becomes Chiron's home. Mount Pelion becomes his home. So he learns about everything, astrology, astronomy, music, poetry, the healing arts, even warcraft. He becomes sort of this Renaissance figure, and he plays a very significant role because the characters of the Iliad and the Odyssey are all trained by Chiron. He's their teacher. So he plays a huge role in establishing them to go on their quests. And he also plays a role with Achilles and We get the whole Achilles heel story, and Chiron is a part of that as well. And so Chiron is this really interesting character. And at the end of his life, he sees Prometheus having his liver pecked out every day, and he can't stand it. So he offers himself up to be a stand-in for Prometheus. And the gods tell him, well, if you do this, you will lose your immortality. And Chiron says, that's okay. I will die for his suffering, right? So it's kind of a weird inversion of the Christ theme, because Christ dies, or Jesus dies and attains immortality, right? His soul is resurrected and is immortal, whereas Chiron is immortal, and he sacrifices himself to become a man, theoretically. So it's just really, there's a sacrificial component to Chiron, but the outcomes are quite different. And Prometheus, of course, is in some ways is the embodiment of the hubris of man, right? Like, he's going to steal fire from the gods. How dare you, Prometheus? And so he's punished severely for that. So Chiron, again, plays this almost Christian-like figure. But again, it's inverted. So, you know, when we look at Chiron through the various signs, it takes on these qualities that are associated with the sign. And right now, Chiron, and has been for a while, is in the sign of Aries. And Aries represents the military, war, first responders, police, athletes, football players, boxers. And if you go through and look at what's been happening ever since Chiron went into Aries, I could take you into every one of those categories and unequivocally show you that they've all been affected by Chiron. Let's talk about football, right? What does Aries represent? Represents the head. And what has been one of the biggest hue and cries in pro football over the last 10 years? Concussions, CTE, right? And that became a really big deal. They even made a movie out of it with Will Smith. And so what happens? Well, you have a bunch of mothers who don't want their boys playing football. And one of the things that football does, for better or worse, is that it does provide a rite of passage for young men. And they have to go through things that are very uncomfortable. They have to confront violence. They have to confront pain. They have to confront, at times, authoritarian figures that don't give a shit about their feelings, right? They also have to sort of find their place amongst the group, which would be the team. And as a result of this, you have less and less young men joining football now because of the hue and cry of these mothers, right? So that's one. Another thing that we've seen through Chiron, thanks to Black Lives Matter and any number of other groups and politicians, is defunding the police, right? And what does that do? It makes the police weaker. You know, whatever your views are on law enforcement, when you take away the resources to hire more people, and you take away the resources to have more and in-depth, better training, what you're doing is you are subverting their ability to, at any point in time, do their jobs. And sometimes they're crappy at it. Sometimes they're corrupt. But, you know, look at what happened during the summer of Floyd, right? It was a national stand down. And we had the hue and cry of defund the police. Aries is the police. Chiron makes it weaker. So that's another example. Look at the armed services. What are they doing with the armed services? Well, it's okay if you're transgender. It's okay if you're a 250-pound woman. Hey, it's okay if you're a woman and you're a pilot. We'll make a special air flight suit for you to, you know, have you and your baby be able to fly that bomber, right? So that's another version of Chiron. So we're seeing all these versions of Chiron kind of manifest in the culture. Yeah, and I think we've also seen kind of the rise of incel culture with Chiron and Aries, wounded men, men that are wounded. And, you know, and just not being able to deal with conventional relationships because women have been so empowered to the point where slut culture is, you know, celebrated, which is another kind of Chiron and Aries retelling of second wave feminism, right? So this is all part of what's been going on with Chiron and Aries. And, you know, Aries is a fire sign. That's the other part of it. So when we look at Bushnell, who set himself ablaze, he's in the military. He's a soldier. And, you know, there's a lot of really interesting kind of threads that may have contributed to why he did this. Some people, and this was in front of the Israeli embassy, by the way. This is where it took place. Some people believe that he was just a soldier of conscience, that he was like another version of Rachel Corrie. Other people, and I cannot corroborate this, but other people believe that he knew that the United States has troops on the ground in Israel. And with that knowledge, it made him a candidate for Guantanamo. And so instead of going to Guantanamo, he set himself on fire. I can't corroborate that. But we also have the true node in Aries. And the nodes are the ascending and descending plane of the moon. So the moon theoretically moves on this slightly graduated plane, and it goes up and it goes down. So the graduated up plane is the true node. The graduated down plane is the south node. So we've been in the true node in Aries for, when did we start serious sports? That was around August. I think it was around August of last year, roughly July, August. The nodes went from Taurus, Scorpio to Aries, Libra. And, you know, these lunar nodes are also really important for determining, like, what is going on with our time. These nodal cycles last 19 and a half months. So if you go back and look at where the moon's nodes were, and you as a sports guy will completely appreciate this, when the south, and they move backwards, the nodes move backwards. So the nodes were at, I think, around one or zero Cancer. And this was in 2020. And it was the NFL draft. And if you go back and look, so what is Cancer? Cancer's the home. It's family. It's tradition. It's your kind of emotional roots. It's security. It's maternal, right? All those Cancerian things. So they hold the NFL draft. And normally they have it in a, you know, a location like Las Vegas or Nashville or whatever. That year, they held the NFL draft at home because of COVID, right? So you had these shots of these GMs with their kids on their lap, Bill Belichick with his dog, making draft picks. That is the true node in Cancer, right? Like that typified kind of where we were. So then the true node moves into Gemini. And boy, does it move into Gemini, right? It is symbolically represented by the death of George Floyd. So this is right around May, right? Late April, May. I forget the exact date. So George Floyd is a Gemini. And he died. No, George Floyd is a Libra. My bad. He's a Libra, but he dies again, theoretically, in the month of Gemini. I believe it was what, March 24th or May 24th, May 24th. So he dies in the month of Gemini. He dies in Minneapolis, which is the Twin Cities. And the true node is now in Gemini. What happens? Well, all of a sudden, we have all hell breaking loose. We have what is essentially two countries within one. We are a house divided. And to even exacerbate that even more, we have a Gemini in the White House in Donald Trump, and he has two emergency proclamations. One, which is on March 13th of 2020, and then a month later on April 13th of 2020. In the first one, he basically decouples the states from the union by saying, well, I'm going to let the states handle their response to COVID. We're no longer one nation at that time, which is a very kind of Gemini move, right? We go from the macro to the mic to the micro. So we have all these different COVID responses from all over the country. And as a result of that, since we're under that executive order, Trump does not necessarily have the power to do anything at a federal level when the BLM riots hit. So look at that, right? Now we're dealing with looting and arson, and Gil Scott-Heron was wrong when he said the revolution would not be televised. He was wrong because it was televised and it was in our face. And that was the Gemini effect, right? We were and the toppling of statues. I mean, all these things are going on. So what was the opposite sign of Gemini? It's Sagittarius. And what does Sagittarius represent? It represents law. Law, tradition. Where was the law? There was no law. And then there's that incredibly weird moment. Sagittarius also represents religion, by the way. And then there's that incredibly weird moment when the church outside the White House is burning down and Trump is there with the Bible and the Bible's upside down. I mean, you couldn't get more nodal than that moment, right? The burning of the church is Sagittarius, right? And canonical law, religious law. And then there's Trump, the Gemini fire starter in a lot of ways. I mean, these nodes are really powerful. Like, we can track where we are with these nodes. And, we came through this nodal period with the true node in Taurus and then the south node in Scorpio. And that's after the Gemini Sagittarius opposition. Like, even when people were protesting against like the lockdowns after they started to get really tired, they were protesting in their cars and they were driving around state capitals and honking their horns. Like, that's really Gemini, right? Like, you're driving around in your car and that's movement, it's Mercury. So there are all these markers that we could look for. What was interesting was a lot of the South Node stuff that was coming up when those nodes shifted Taurus into Scorpio. And we saw a lot of heavy duty, like Scorpio depravity just surfacing during that time. So yeah, man, I mean, these nodes are really powerful now. And we've had the true node in Aries, I think, since what I think might've been August. And so we're dealing with this idea of the true node in Aries with the individual and action. And Aries is a sign that tends to be spontaneous, meaning that it doesn't, like, there's thinking that goes on, but the thinking is very quick. And it is a byproduct of the exercise of will. So, you know, what we've been dealing with this true node in Aries is a lot of people getting very angry and separating themselves out, right? From, and you can even see this like in social media with the South Node in Libra, you know, politeness is out the door, right? People are just doing everything they can to get their point across and, you know, like, fuck you, right? This is all very Aries-like. And I don't think it's necessarily bad. There are good things about the true node in Aries, because what you're supposed to be doing during this time is learning how to be more independent, you know, standing apart from institutions. And it's really interesting how we as a society here in this country, I can't speak for other countries per se, but we have made these kind of covert compromises, right? A covert compromise. Well, okay, well, this is okay for now, as long as I get my football on Sunday, right? Or this is okay for now, as long as, you know, my grocery bill isn't in, you know, three digits or whatever, you know. This is okay as long as I get, right? So we've been cultivated into this culture of compromise. And it's a really dangerous deal to make these compromises. And now what's happening is that there is less compromise on the table, right? You can even see it with some of the, you know, the shenanigans that are happening on the House with Johnson. Like, that's what got Kevin McCarthy kicked out, right? That he was too compromising. Like, that's a South Node in Libra moment. And then what do you have? You have people say, well, we don't want anybody that will compromise. You know, we want single item bills. And a single item bill is very Aries. Like, we want one thing. We don't want a bunch of pork buried in the bill. And McCarthy was quite good at that, as well as many others. And again, it's a byproduct of Aries, right? It's like, no, we don't want to compromise anymore. You know, we want to have one thing. We want to deal with one thing. The other thing that really strikes me as, again, one of these astrological markers is the carnivore diet. And the carnivore diet is the hunter-gatherer diet, right? And Aries is a hunter. And if you're on a carnivore diet, or really on a carnivore diet, you're eating one thing, right? You're eating beef, and that's it. Right, so you can see how these nodes really have their cultural fingerprints on things. So now we throw that true node in there, conjunct Chiron, and they were exact. They were sitting right on top of each other at 17 degrees. And we have the self-immolating, the wounded soldier, one-pointed, single-pointed. You know, there wasn't any compromise there. Well, I'll only set my hand on fire. So, you know, and it'll be my shooting hand. So I'll never have to pull a trigger again. No, he went full Monty on the blaze. The other thing that I found very weird about that moment was that it kind of mirrored in some ways the cover of Wish You Were Here by Pink Floyd. And there are those two guys on the cover of the album. And one guy's on fire. And the other guy's shaking his hand. And, you know, who's the main man of Pink Floyd is Roger Waters. And what is Roger Waters known for? His outspoken attitude towards Israel, So this is all to me, this stuff gets really deep and fascinating. So when I saw that, it was like, oh wow, this is a symbol. This is a really, really big symbol for us.
You also mentioned the South Node in Scorpio and the impact it's having, the loss of sanity, for lack of a better term, this giving in to one's base primal impulses is being pushed as if it's the norm now. Now, granted, a lot of that is breaking out all over the place, but you can hardly spend any time on Facebook or Twitter or other social media and without seeing some of these videos of parents having meltdowns, of teens having meltdowns, of road rage. It seems like whatever astronomical and non-corporeal forces are working through people, it's having an impact, and it's causing them people to behave erratically, and it's causing them to really given to their base primordial impulses. What are your thoughts about that going forward?
Yeah. So, rewind the clock. And clearly, a lot of that stuff was, coming out during that time. And, in Taurus, which is on the other side, is supposed to be grounded and safe and secure. And, those are the values theoretically that we're supposed to champion. And I think you bring up an interesting question, and it's how these things get inside of us, right? Like, how do they get inside of us? Are they a byproduct of these cosmic influences that, we can clearly establish that the moon is a player in our lives. Right? Like we could clearly establish through tides and tidal cycles that the moon is really important. The Farmer's Almanac prints yearly almanacs, how and when to plant by lunar cycles. My girlfriend is a dentist, and she will attest that when the full moon is on, that there is more blood seemingly available when she goes into people's mouths, right? So we know that the moon has an impact, just does, physical impact. So how does it get inside of us? Is it through that south node? Because the moon is also connected to the collective, right? It rules our unconscious forces. When we think of somebody like Edward Bernays, right, who was really adept at controlling the masses, he often used the egg as a symbol. And the egg is a symbol of fertility. And when we think of the moon, we think of the moon as fertility as well, right? Women are on a cycle, right? They're on a cycle that, in a lot of ways, is, a very feminine lunar cycle. So I think the moon plays a tremendous role in this idea that, these I don't know which non-corporeal forces can enter into us. And then when we have such a connected relationship with the collective, right, it is easy for people to have more of a group madness, even whether it's kind of planned and on schedule, or whether it's just kind of this unusual byproduct of hysteria. When I think of the moon, I think of hysteria. When we look at the sun is Apollonian. And when the sun is out, I mean, theoretically, we don't really deal with hysteria that much, right? We can see where we're going. We have shadows, which, sort of define the difference between light and dark. But it's when the sun goes down, that's when people's fears creep up. That's when mania begins. That's when kind of this lunacy can kick in for people. People talk about sleepless nights. They don't talk about sleepless days. So the moon plays a tremendous role in all of this. The maddening of the crowd. So when we look at the lunar phases of the South Node, I think that that's where they get in, right? That's where we're vulnerable. That is the equivalent of a computer system or network being hacked, right? It's the South Node that hacks us or has the potential to hack us. And since we're interconnected with social media in such a way, it's really easy for these algorithms to be pushed. And again, that's control over the collective. And what are they controlling? They're controlling emotions. And the moon is connected to emotions. The sun is not connected to emotions. The sun is dispassionate, right? The sun is stoic, but not the moon. So I think you're onto something, James, when it comes to the how and the why. It's through these lunar forces that are being amplified through social media, which creates mania. And how many times have we gone through these stupid ass fads, right? Like, the Tide Pod, right?
Ice Bucket Challenge.
Ice Bucket Challenge. Right? These are all completely, in many ways, irrational. They're kind of lunar, right? And when you look into any real serious astrological deep dives on the moon, they'll take you right where I'm going with it. And if you look at the moon card in the Rider-Waite deck or most decks, it's a fairly ominous card, right? It doesn't portray the moon in sort of this, sylvan light, in sort of this, kind of goddess-like figure. You've got Coyote's Bane at the moon, and it's a fairly ominous card in that deck, and it really represents the unknown, but more importantly, the fear of the unknown. And I think that's what's being capitalized on. And people have been so traumatized that it's easy. It's easy to get in and start turning the screws on people.
Well, we've seen in the recent past, people with a little more depth of understanding don't have the primal fear reaction, but for many surface level truthers, as I call them, when there's an announcement or some kind of revelation of an impending emergency services alert, FEMA drill, suggestions of mass hiring of crisis actors for a given date or a given series of drills, suddenly there's this mass panic that takes hold, right? We saw this in the recent past about this emergency alert, which turned out to be a huge nothing burger. Yet people were turning off their phones or putting their phones in their microwaves just to avoid being accessed or something. And there's potential for all of that sometime down the line. But it's interesting how just the simple, as far as I know, the genesis of all that was one podcaster coming on talking about this, and it spread like wildfire. And then I think about how the algorithms push, like you just mentioned, these primordial atavistic fears onto us. Like, of course, now Facebook is 90% ads and what have you, but the algorithm mixes in like a large amount of predatory type videos, short videos, insect wars, monitor lizards devouring goats and other creatures, and road rage, and random acts of violence. So what it seems to be doing is at some deep level, it's actually encouraging that sort of behavior, making it more acceptable for one to give in to their base primal impulses, where before there may have been some semblance of impulse control, but gradually, incrementally, and now by leaps and bounds, those safety nets have been gradually eroded and eradicated in many people. And now the slightest thing is setting people off. We're seeing videos of mass looting of stores. If it feels good, do it. And so that does not portend well, especially for America, when you see the mass influx of immigration, of war age fighting males into the country at a time when the psyche of the very country and country itself is radically divided. You're right. One hasn't seen this level of division since the American Civil War. What are your thoughts and time you have left in this first segment of, and we can delve into this deeper in the member segment about the potential for civil war strife, the country breaking up into like fiefdoms.
So I think I want to save the bulk of that for the next section, because that's a pretty deep dive. There's a lot of areas we can touch on, but I do want to address your question about the videos and the algorithm, and I call this the world star hip hop effect. And there was I guess where was World Star showing up on? It wasn't on YouTube. It was on one of these other video platform delivery services. So people who aren't aware of World Star Hip Hop, they kind of got their start with something called the Knockout Game, and these would be young black males who would sneak up on somebody and hit them and knock them out, and in most cases, the person who was being knocked out was white, right? So the knockout game started to get a lot of traction. And if you go back and look at, again, these are all videos that have been massively pushed on Twitter. There are just numbers of examples of hardcore black on white violence. And it's usually group related, two to three, usually males, but not always males. And these videos were populating my feed and all these other feeds, right? And what does that do? You know, what does that do to the people who would perpetrate, in many, many cases, these senseless acts of violence? Well, it means they're going to get their little 15 minutes, right? And so for them, the endorphin rush is, yo, my video surfaced on Twitter and it's up to 4.5 million views, right? That's a really bad reward system. What does it do to these so-called whites who are watching that video? It makes their blood boil. And it makes them seek retribution, right? So by doing this, they're encouraging one group to continue to do it because, well, it's getting traction. And then they are rubbing it in the other group's face. And let's be just, have a moment of honesty here. Okay. Ever since the summer of Floyd and the defunding of police and the quote unquote de-escalation of interactions, many of these people who commit these heinous crimes are back on the streets very quickly. There are even cases where somebody has defended themselves, and rightfully so. And what comes to mind was the bodega owner in New York City. And apparently, a girl came in and didn't have enough money for whatever. And he said, "I can't sell it to you." And she was just going to take it. He wasn't going to let her. And eventually her boyfriend came in and started tussling with him. This is an older guy who has a bodega in New York. And at that point, he was in danger of his life. So what did he do? He cut him, got a knife and he cut him. And what happened? He got arrested. Here's another example. Now, I think eventually they let him walk. I think eventually. Then you had the guy in the subway in New York City, and you had the dude that was acting out, right? And he was just trying to subdue this guy. Well, it turns into another George Floyd situation. Now that guy's going to jail, right? And it's because people have seen all of these things on social media. And again, now let's go back to the True Note in Aries. They want to take a stand, right? They want to take a stand. They want to say enough is enough. Frankly, given the situation that we're in, I don't blame them. And again, this is all byproduct of a lot of these soft compromises we made along the way. So then what happens? Well, let's go into the opposite sign of Libra, right? What is Libra? Fairness, balance, and justice. Well, what do we find out? Well, the law doesn't work the same way for two groups of people. The scales of justice are tilted much more heavily in one direction than the other. All this is by design. This is all social engineering. And the end result is to do their absolute very best to create a civil war, to create a race war. And and we could talk about that, again on the other side, but that's and they've been front loading this for a while now. And I have to say that the so-called black community is really waking up. And there are a number of podcasters, even though I don't always agree with him, Jason Whitlock is right out front. And he's, telling people, especially black males, you're being manipulated. You're being manipulated by people. You're being manipulated by the Democrats and the liberals. You're being manipulated by black women who have been put in a place of power. And you're being manipulated by them. You're being manipulated by socially liberal progressive white women as well. And so these guys are starting to wake up now. And Whitlock starts, he gets his crosshairs on some of these sacred cows. Like he's taken on Deion Sanders. And now he's taken on Stephen A. Smith. And he's a bulldog, right? He's a Taurus. He's a total bulldog. And there are a lot of his black audience. Well, lighten up. Why don't you lighten up? Well, he's not lightening up because nobody else is doing it. He's talking about, in a lot of ways, how these people are being placed in a position of being influencers. And that's their role, right? And they're not there to have a discussion about the truth. They're there to push vaccines, or they're there to, push whatever narrative that whoever is in power wants them to push. And in this case, you get somebody like Charles Barkley, And Charles Barkley and Stephen A. Smith just had a podcast together. And, you know, Barkley is vehemently pro-gay and pro-trans, right? And, you know, and Stephen A. Smith comes right in. And look, you can be pro-gay, you can be pro-trans, whatever, right? But Jason Whitlock brought up a really interesting point when he was doing a critique. And he says, well, yeah, they're standing up for these people and they're standing up for this perspective. But where are they with the biblical perspective, right? Where are they with the Christian perspective? They're not there. And the reason they're not there is because Charles Barkley's contract with TNT would end real fast if he went down that path, right? So it's really fascinating watching this sort of tidal shift occur. And you're seeing this in what I would call sort of the Black truth community. It's waking up, starting to see more women wake up as well. And we really need this, right? Like, they have done everything in their power to pit us against one another. And if we're going to survive and get through this, we need basically everybody on the same team, you know? And it's like, there may be differences, but we'll sort those differences out later. And then to your point, there are lots of gatekeepers on the so-called truth movement. And these are real Pied Pipers, and they're dangerous people, very dangerous people. And they give you enough information, but they don't give you the whole thing. They just give you enough to feel like you're getting, like Alex Jones is a perfect example of that. He's the king of the gatekeepers. And you know, they're dangerous, right? They're dangerous because they give people a limited view of kind of what we're going through. And, you know, if we want to talk about that on the other side, we can do that as well.
Well, please cooperate with me, Mr. Pointer, so I can unclick my mute. Thank you. That was a very thoughtful first segment. And we got a lot to mull over in the second segment. Could you give our viewing and listening audience, you know, the means to contact you and find all your information?
Yeah, so I have a website, robertphoenix.com, and my stock and trade is that I am a working astrologer. So I actually work with people with their charts and in a number of different capacities. I also have a YouTube channel called The 11th House, where I do a lot of stream. Oh, it's all live streaming. So Tuesday through Thursday, I do something called The Astro Weather. It starts at 8 o'clock in the morning, and I basically look at what's happening astrologically for that day. And I talk about individual effects, collective effects, and I have a star of the day, and I try to pick a person whose birthday it is that day that kind of has a unique chart, and we can kind of see them in their chart. On Fridays, I have the Friday Farcast, which has been mostly an interview show, although I've been flying solo a lot lately on that show. Sunday night, I have Sunday Night Astro Live, where I really dive into astrology. And then I've been doing a sports show with Al Dogg, and that's called Serious Sports, and we usually do that on Monday night. So just go to The 11th House on YouTube, and you'll find a lot of that content. Be sure to click under the live link, because that's where the majority of my videos live.
Thank you for that, Robert. And for your listeners out there, if you like what we do, if you believe in what we do, please go to thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up, become a member, and we'll see you at the top of the member segment.